From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A big election in Pakistan over the weekend. Former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, himself toppled and exiled in a coup in 1999, looks to be the big winner in what's being hailed as the first fully democratic transition of power in the country's history. But it came with a price in blood, over 150 killed in the campaign, mostly by the Taliban, whose spokesman called democracy a system of infidels. Where does Pakistan, the great U.S. frenemy, go from here? This hour on Point, an election and the future of Pakistan. You can join us on air or online. What are we seeing in this vote in Pakistan? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are reaching out on lots of lines to Pakistan as we speak here, but phone lines are tough there. We will bring them through as they emerge. With us right now from Washington is Stephen Cohen, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, researches South Asian political and security issues, author of The Future of Pakistan. Stephen Cohen, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Good to be with you today, Tom.
You know what phone lines can be like to Pakistan.
Right, right.
Here we are. So Nawaz Sharif, he's already had, he's been prime minister twice. Now he's back. We've got a lot to look at here. I guess first the significance, 66 years and the first time that we have, if everything continues to unfold as now expected, the transition from one democratically elected government to another. Is this a big deal? Is it just a fluke?
It's a big deal, but there are bigger deals ahead. And in a sense, the critical event that may shape Pakistan's future has not yet occurred, or the critical events, plural. And Pakistan is a country in deep trouble. I've often compared it with a man who swallowed poison, who's were sitting on a chair with dynamite underneath him, where there's a hurricane headed in his direction and people are shooting at him. So which will get Pakistan first, or will Pakistan survive as a normal state? We don't know. And in the book on the future of Pakistan, my guess was that Pakistan will remain more or less normal, including elections like this and maybe even a military takeover for the next 5 or 6 years. But before that will happen, the Americans will pull out of Afghanistan. And how we pull out of Afghanistan could have a tremendous impact on Pakistan.
When you say Pakistan will remain normal, I'm not sure what that means in Pakistan's case.
Not break up, not be a religious extremist state, have elections which are more or less fair, where there's a change of people in power. Even the military might come in, take over power, but that would only be a temporary basis. In other words, not a cultural or political revolution in Pakistan. For Pakistan, that's normal. Actually, it would be normal for a lot of other states, but to see Pakistan, like Iran, actually undergo a religious revolution, or Pakistan, as it used to be, undergo partition in 1970-71, where the country was vivisected in part by India, part by its own incompetence, that would be abnormal. Why does this matter for Americans? It really matters for a couple of reasons. And one, of course, is that Pakistan is what Iran would like to be. It is a nuclear weapon state with not just one or two nuclear weapons, but somewhere between 50 and 100 nuclear weapons. And secondly, of course, Pakistan has been the place where a lot of terrorists have called home. Pakistan has been the launching pad for a lot of movements, both in Europe and to some degree in the United States, and of course in neighboring countries where terrorists have made their base. And we don't want to see that happen. That's a critical, both of those things, nuclear weapons and terrorists, are really two vital American interests.
Nawaz Sharif, apparently emerging as the new prime minister as he puts a government together. Of course, he was up against Imran Khan, former Playboy superstar, cricket player. Yeah. Also was up against the son of Benazir Bhutto, who was assassinated in 2007. Imran Khan made a big run at him with a big appeal to corruption-free Pakistan and the youth vote. You mentioned Pakistan's nuclear weaponry. Nawaz Sharif, the apparent winner, was saying again and again on the campaign trail, I guess up against Imran Khan, he said, "I've played cricket too, but it's not the only thing I've done. Yeah, I also made the atom bomb." What's Nawaz Sharif's history with the bomb in Pakistan?
Well, he accepted it. He tolerated it. It began before he entered politics. Began really even under Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, Benazir's father. Mm-hmm. And then under Zia, Nawaz was a minor politician under Zia. Zia cultivated and brought him into power in Punjab. And he did not oppose the bomb. In fact, from a Pakistani point of view, rationally, nuclear weapons are critically important the same way they're important for Israel. You know, Pakistanis don't want to be overrun by their neighbors, especially India. So it makes sense, and it's a very popular issue in Pakistan. But being an irresponsible nuclear issue, nuclear power is a different question. We've accommodated the Indians. We've accommodated the Israelis. Both countries are not non-NPT signatories. That is, they haven't signed the NPT.
Non-proliferation treaty.
Non-proliferation treaty. But I think one of the big policy questions for the United States is, can we bring ourselves to accept the fact that Pakistan does have between perhaps 80 and 100 nuclear weapons, and we want to urge them to become as responsible a nuclear weapon state as they can. Now, you know, and I think that's one of the big policy options for the United States to move in that direction. A lot of people in Washington would oppose it. They would regard it as rewarding Pakistan. But we've done this with the Indians. We've done this tacitly with the Israelis, in a sense, have them not in the treaty because they can't join it legally, but have them abide by the terms of the NPT, Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Stephen Cohen, stand by in Washington. We have a line through now to Islamabad, and Richard Leibes, Pakistan Bureau Chief for the Washington Post. Richard, thank you very much for joining us. What's the state of the vote and the vote count at this point? How's it look, Richard?
Hi, Tom. The state of the vote is about where it was yesterday, but that means Nawaz Sharif is going to be the next prime minister, because as of yesterday, it was, 125 seats, which is so close to a simple majority that he already has the government locked up. Might get it up to 128 or 130, but that's just of interest to the bean counters at this point. Nawaz Sharif was so confident that he came out and claimed victory, but when the balloting trends appeared to him to give him victory.
We're reading reports, Richard, of massive charges, of massive vote rigging in Karachi and beyond. Are these serious charges? Are they serious enough to have an impact on the outcome?
Every other objective, independent observer that's been briefing the media today says it was a fair and transparent election. The protests in Karachi, Lahore, and now in Islamabad, I don't know if they have a valid reason for protesting. Imran Khan from his hospital bed yesterday made a complaint about the rigging. I don't have a good sense of whether any of it is true. What I can tell you is that the European observers and other independent observers gave reports today a clean bill.
In advance of the vote, there was a lot of violence. 100, 150 deaths were told, many of them apparently at the hands of the Taliban, who were, in particular, we read, going after more secular political parties in Pakistan. What about the balance of violence and its targets in the campaign season, Richard?
The three parties which were targeted, secular parties, were targeted because they had been in power or joined coalitions with the People's Party, and the operations against the Taliban were carried out under their rule. The Taliban specifically said, we're not targeting Nawaz Sharif's party nor Imran Khan's party because they weren't in power. So what transpired was a very restricted campaigns by the Awami National Party, the People's Party, and the MQM in Karachi. So it made the playing field a bit less level than it should have been, obviously. Nawaz Sharif's rallies were huge. Imran Khan's rallies were huge. And the PPP had to resort to video messages, essentially. And small corner rallies that only draw a few hundred people. So I think the Taliban had a vote here. Did they rig the election, pre-rig the election? To a certain extent.
And of course, the son of Benazir Bhutto.
I wouldn't think so.
The son of Benazir Bhutto with the People's Party, who has been in control, having to campaign or choosing to campaign, having to from Dubai, not even in the country because of that threat, I guess.
Yes, and I mean, it's a legitimate fear. Being the grandson of a hanged, Bhutto, and the son of an assassinated Bhutto, and later, earlier in the week, last week, the son...
Sounds like we may have lost Richard Leiby with the Washington Post there. We will go back to Pakistan in just a moment. Richard Leiby, Pakistan bureau chief for the Washington Post, joining us for a moment there. We'll go in just a second to Adil Najam and Ahmed Rashid in Pakistan. We have to take a short break coming right up here. Stephen Cohen, there the kind of incredible image of, as Richard was saying, grandson of a prime minister, son of a prime minister, being forced to campaign from outside the country because of legitimate fears and threats to his life.
Yes, I think that that cast a big shadow over the election, but a lot of so-called democracies have not had really fair and free elections. I think you have to compare Pakistan with its past, where the elections were rigged from the beginning. In this case, I once had a conversation with Pervez Musharraf right after he got rid of Nawaz Sharif and installed military rule in Pakistan. I told Musharraf that the only long-term solution for Pakistan is to have a free election, then to have another free election, that the army should stay out of it. And he dismissed that. He then intervened in politics more deeply himself. I think this is a free election following another free election, not maybe half free elections. And a third real free election would, in a sense, put Pakistan on that right path. But in the meantime, Pakistan is faced with multiple threats.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about new leadership in Pakistan, the big U.S. ally, frenemy in South Asia, and implications for Pakistanis, Afghanistan, the Taliban, India, nukes, the United States. First time in 66 years we're seeing a transition from one democratically elected government to another. There have been many coups and disruptions. In a press conference after the election this weekend, the chief election commissioner of Pakistan said nearly 60% of the country's eligible population had cast a vote. Here he is interpreted by Al Jazeera English.
Percentage of voting is very high.
The percentage of voting is very high. This is what I call empowerment of the people, a public show of strength.
Nearly 60%, about the same, maybe a bit more than the U.S. turnout in the presidential elections here in the United States last fall. And in his victory speech yesterday, his former Prime Minister, Nawaz Sharif, headed back into that role now, calling on his opponents in the election to help him in addressing the nation's problems going forward. Here he is interpreted by Sky News.
For the sake of the nation, for your sake, for the sake of Pakistan's 180 million people, and in order to end this wretched load shedding, unemployment, poverty and inflation, I want to ask them, the opponents, to come and sit with us.
Nawaz Sharif with open arms there. Stephen Cohen joins us from Washington, author of The Future of Pakistan. His new book, Shooting for a Century, The India-Pakistan Conundrum, out later this month. With us right now from Lahore, Adil Najam, Vice Chancellor at the Lahore University of Management Sciences, former professor of international relations at Boston University in our backyard. Adil Najam, welcome back. It's always good to hear from you.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great to have you here. And also with us from Lahore is Ahmed Rashid, Pakistani journalist and author of Pakistan on the Brink, The Future of America, Pakistan and Afghanistan. Ahmed Rashid, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Adil, how's it going down in Pakistan? What's the reaction that you're seeing? How's the Nawaz Sharif victory being received?
I think there's a lot of frenzy. There's a lot of excitement. I think there is a lot of real excitement, even amongst those who might have wished for a different result. The transition that you talked about from one democratic government to another is a major one. It's not lost on people. And in many ways, sort of, it really was a people's election in that sense. The high turnout that was recorded despite all the violence and the bombs and the Taliban. I think that itself was a major vote. Someone tweeted the other day that the country showed a collective vote-stained finger to the Taliban by coming out to vote in these numbers despite all the violence that had been going on.
Ahmed Rashid, we have Pakistani listeners in the U.S. responding and saying online that the vote was along ethnic lines, and that's important. Do you see that, Ahmed? What's it mean?
Sorry, I'm not understanding the question. The line was very bad.
Was the vote along ethnic lines in Pakistan?
Well, you know, that unfortunately has been one of the successes of the Taliban. The Taliban targeted three political parties, including the former ruling party, the People's Party, and these three parties were strongest in the three smaller provinces, and that is where we have seen the most violence. The Taliban have not targeted the Nawaz Sharif's party in the Punjab, or Imran Khan's party, which is also largely based in the Punjab. So in that sense, you know, there are tensions between Punjab and the three smaller provinces. But Sharif has taken a very a mature, conciliatory line. He's trying to, I think, bridge the gap. He's certainly aware of this problem and the feeling of insecurity and deprivation that exists in the three smaller provinces. So, I mean, I hope that this hurdle will be got over with quickly.
Adil Najam, describe Pakistan's economic circumstances. There seems to be an awful lot of concern there, big power outages, big industries in trouble, big concern over how to employ such a large and rising young population. What is Pakistan up against, and what about Nawaz Sharif's outlook on the economy? Hello, Adil, are you there? Ahmed, perhaps I'll give that to you if you can grab it.
Well, you know, people are expecting dramatic changes, and we've seen some real movement. I mean, Nawaz Sharif has just invited the Indian Prime Minister to attend his swearing-in ceremony. He is already, informally announcing his finance minister, who is probably going to go to Washington to meet with the IMF in the next few days in order to get a much-needed IMF support package. So I think, you know, even though, you know, the results have not been formally announced, and even though we are perhaps 3 or 4 weeks away from a formal government inauguration, he's moving very fast. He knows that the crisis here is very, very deep, very severe, and really, you know, everything hangs in the next few weeks. He's got to tackle many things at the same time.
Let's get a call right here from Sultan, calling from Pelham, New Hampshire. Sultan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
All right. What's your question?
I think on one hand, I'm really excited that the Nawaz Sharif was, you know, his old house was right across our house in Lahore. So I'm glad that he's the prime minister now. But there are two things on both sides. One is on Western countries that they should not punish Pakistan and should consider them as a nuclear power and remove all the restrictions to cope with energy and also help them building hydroelectric dams or whatever, because energy shortage is really killing all of an unstable Pakistan is not in the interest of the United States or others. So they, on the other hand, Nawaz Sharif also in the previous time, he would become very, very nepotism. And Supreme Court Judge Punjab, Army Chief, every big post he was giving to Punjabis. And I think he must have learned this, that does not fit. They should be inclusive for all the provinces and also the rights of minorities, you know, Shias and Ahmadis and whatever, because that is fundamental right, human right, plus Islamic right. Islam protects the minorities and the way they are. So this will create another new atmosphere under new administration, a second successful election, I think, which places Pakistan in very must be very good position.
So, Sultan, let us pick it up right there. Islam may protect minorities, but that certainly hasn't been the case in Pakistan a lot of the time. Ahmed, let me come to you on this question of nuclear power. Energy shortages, as our caller says, a big, big problem in Pakistan, and yet it's a nuclear power. What about nuclear energy in Pakistan, Ahmed? Has it been developed? Has it been restricted by international pressure somehow?
Well, nuclear energy, along with Pakistan's nuclear weapons program, has been developed by the Chinese, but there's still very little power that is actually generated by nuclear plants. Although that, you know, it takes many, many years to build a nuclear power plant, and there are two or three power plants being built by the Chinese at the moment, but they will take many years to come online. As far as this minority thing is concerned, I think it's very, very important that Sharif does reach out to the minorities. I think there's been a terrible spate of killings of minorities by the Taliban and other extremist groups, and the previous government did very little about it and was unable to stop it. And I think certainly, you know, the new government now, you know, has an opportunity to do something, to reach out, provide better protection, but also, obviously, to deal with the Taliban.
Ahmed, here we have Nawaz Sharif. He came to prominence in General Zia al-Haq's military regime in the 1980s. He's owner of one of the biggest business conglomerates in Pakistan, one of the country's wealthiest men. He's been prime minister twice before. What reputation did he leave office with before, Ahmed?
Well, he had a reputation before in the 1990s of being basically the handmaiden of the military. He was supported and backed by the military. He was groomed by the military. And it was only after he took on the military in 1999 as former army chief and then President Musharraf that he was overthrown in a coup, was jailed for a long time and then went into exile and spent many years in London and Dubai. And it was during that period that his views have really changed and matured. And he's become, I think, a very different person. He's become someone who believes much more in democracy and in democracy and in freedom, and much more committed to you know, civilian control over the military and civilian control over issues such as foreign policy, which traditionally the military have always controlled in Pakistan. So, you know, we're dealing with a new Sharif. A Sharif who's very different from the 90s Sharif, and someone we don't really know exactly what he's going to do, except that, you know, we are hopeful that he's not the same man he was 20 years ago.
Let's get a call from Los Angeles, California. Sri Ram is calling. Sri Ram, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is about Nawaz Sharif's credibility in foreign policy. Last time the India and Pakistan had armed conflict, when he was prime minister, he claimed he was unaware of it. What does that say about his competence in foreign policy issues?
You mean in Kashmir?
Yes, in Kashmir. He said he was unaware that the conflict was being started, and he had no control over the military at that time. So, you know, will it be different this time?
Well, let's go to that. Adil Najam, I think we've got you back. What about Nawaz Sharif's relationship now with the military? It remains, of course, very strong in Pakistan. It toppled him when he was pushed out of office and then into exile earlier. What about his relationship with the military establishment now, Adil Najam?
Yeah, two or three things. First, the Kashmir issue that the caller raised said more about General Musharraf than it said about Nawaz Sharif. The second point would be, one of the things that Nawaz Sharif has been doing, including today, is he's redirecting the focus on India, and in a very positive way. He invited the Indian Prime Minister to his oath taking today.
Yes.
That's probably not going to happen, but it's a gesture that he's making, that he's going to make India-Pakistan relations a centerpiece. On the military, the interesting thing is his relationship will be very, very different with the military today than it was in his last stints because of what the military did to him. And he seems to have made that clear. And the first test is going to come very soon because the term and the tenure of the current chief of army staff is about to end. So he will have to, A, replace him, find a new person, and that's going to say a lot about what that is going to be about. He's now saying that he will reimpose civilian control over the military. That's easier said than done.
Ahmed Rashid, we're coming up on a critical period in the NATO-U.S. presence in Afghanistan. Of course, the drawdown, pullout, drawdown there into 2014. What about Nawaz Sharif's relationship with the United States as regards its presence in Afghanistan next door and the U.S. drone attacks on Taliban in Pakistan, Ahmed?
Well, during the election campaign, all the political parties and the leaders, including Nawaz Sharif, were very strongly anti-American, because that was something that was going down very well with the public. But I think now that he has won the election, he is going to have to be much more practical and realistic. And he is a very practical person, and he's said that he wants to improve relations with the United States and facilitate the withdrawal of American forces from Afghanistan. But one of the very big stumbling blocks is going to be the American use of drone missiles. Pakistan is very much, all the political parties and the military are very much against the use of drones, which are fired from Afghanistan and kill Taliban and Al-Qaeda targets in Pakistan. And this is going to be one of the major talking points, I think, with the Americans. But I think as far as trying to help the Americans get out of Afghanistan and also trying to get talks going once again between the Americans and the Afghan Taliban, I think Sharif will be helpful here. The relationship with the Americans is a very complicated one now, and multidimensional. But the fact is that Pakistan needs the IMF. It needs support from the West right now in order to rescue its economy. And I think Sharif is going to be very practical as far as trying to, if not improve, at least steady relations with the U.S.
Stephen Cohen in Washington, how do you see the implications of the Nawaz Sharif apparent victory in terms of for the United States and its drawdown in Afghanistan next door?
Well, I think there's a obvious bargain here, and Ahmed Rashid referred to it. That is, Pakistan needs us in terms of economic support because it's a bankrupt country and investment and so forth. And we need Pakistan to facilitate our withdrawal from Afghanistan. And a failed American policy in Afghanistan, that is a victory for the Taliban, could sweep over Pakistan. I think that would be the event that could transform Pakistan very negatively. So there's an opportunity for a deal. It is, they control the Taliban, they arrange a withdrawal, help us arrange a withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is gradual and normal. And we of course, shade back on the drone attacks, which is an insult to Pakistani intelligence as well as integrity and national identity. But will this happen? Does even the military, Pakistan military, which I think should be praised for its reticence in a lot of this, can they control the Taliban? They're fighting the Taliban, the Pakistan Taliban, in Pakistan itself. So I think one of the big questions is how Leninist or how Maoist the Taliban really are, how ideologically driven they really are. Can they be taken into a negotiation with the U.S. and with Pakistan? I'm skeptical, but George Shultz once told me, you know, hope is not a policy. But a Pakistani diplomat friend said, despair is not a policy either. So somewhere between hope and despair, we might be able to solve the Afghan question, our withdrawal from Afghanistan with Pakistan's help.
Adil Najam, we just have a minute before the break. What about Nawaz Sharif's relationship with the Taliban? His party was conspicuously not, in general, attacked by the Taliban during the campaign. What's his relationship?
I think I'm not sure if there's a relationship, but he's certainly not been as critical of them as many would have hoped for. And nor has Imran Khan, and in terms of U.S.-Pakistan relationship, you're going to hear as much about Imran as about Nawaz Sharif, because Imran's PTIE is going to form the government in what used to be the frontier province, what's now called Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, and he's going to do it with the coalition of religious parties. And he has been the loudest voice in terms of criticism of U.S. policy, including drones. So that's the battle zone there, and you're going to hear a lot about him in terms of how Pakistan-U.S. relations.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new leadership in Pakistan as a democratic transition is apparently underway there now, the first time from one elected government to another democratically elected government in the country's 66-year history. Nawaz Sharif, conservative, headed into the role of prime minister. Stephen Cohen is with us from the Brookings Institution in Washington, author of The Future of Pakistan. Ahmed Rashid with us from Lahore, author of Pakistan on the Brink. And Adil Najam, who is currently vice chancellor at Lahore University of Management Sciences, also with us from Lahore. In his victory speech yesterday, the former prime minister, now headed into that role again, Nawaz Sharif, emphasized his commitment to the youth of Pakistan, a country where an incredible 63% of the population is under 25. Sharif here interpreted by the BBC.
The promises we had made to the youth, he said, with God's help, we will fulfill each and every single promise which we made to you.
We will fill all those promises. And Imran Khan, the superstar cricketer, now leader of the Pakistan Movement for Justice Party, discussed the results of the election.
We have moved forward now. Our democratic process has moved forward. Most of all, from my point of view, Tehreek Insaf has become a force. We will play a role as an opposition in the center.
There, Imran Khan, who will play a role in this new government, bringing his victory count into the new government's total count, it looks like. Stephen Cohen, his party will also, as we just heard, be in charge in the northwest of Pakistan, where the Pakistan Taliban is particularly strong. What are the implications of that, Stephen?
Well, because that election was contaminated by the assassinations against the Awami National Party, it's not quite clear who's going to actually control the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province and the northwest area of Pakistan. I think one of the tragic things that's happened to Pakistan is that the central government or the state of Pakistan has lost control over some of the regions. This is true of Balochistan. This is certainly true of Karachi as a city, which is like a quarter of Pakistan's income coming through Karachi. And, of course, it's true of the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. The state's writ only goes where the army goes, and the army, of course, is battling the TTP, the Pakistan Taliban, in the tribal area. So he may form a government there. Whether he can actually govern is another question. Or he governed perhaps with the support of some of the religious parties. They were in power once before, and actually they didn't do that bad a job. But the Pakistan Taliban hadn't arisen by then.
Let's go to Bill calling from Chicago. Bill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Just a few minutes ago, one of your guests was speaking about the Pakistan Taliban and used the phrase Maoist and Leninist in relation to them. I've never, ever heard them described as Maoist or Leninist. Can he please expand on that? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Bill. Stephen, was that you? And what did you mean?
I said that, yeah. And we don't actually know how much about the Taliban itself. We know it's an ideological group. It wants to restore the Quran, wants to create an Islamic state in Pakistan. But how committed are they to that? Are they pragmatists? Can they negotiate? Are they organized along Leninist lines or Maoist lines like the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia?
But by that, strictly their structural organization or their ideology or both?
Yeah, both. Are they guided by a totalitarian ideology? And are they organized along Leninist lines, top-down lines? I don't know. I mean, frankly, nobody's had these kinds of conversations with the Taliban themselves. We've had difficulty in dealing with them because of our role in Afghanistan. Pakistanis claim they know them. Some people claim they've met the Taliban. But again, Taliban themselves are something of a mystery. So I suggest if they are Leninist, if they are truly ideologically motivated and simply want to create a pure heaven on earth in the areas they conquer, then we're in for a lot of trouble, as is the Pakistan government, because the only way you can defeat a group like that is by force. And they're dug in. But they're also an ethnic group. They're also Pashtun. And years ago, I wrote a paper. I said, you know, the wave of the future after communism disappears will be the rise of ethnic identities and religious identities. In the case of the Taliban, you have both Pakhtun, which is an ethnic identity, and Islam, which is a religious identity. That's a very powerful combination.
Ahmed Rashid in Lahore, how do you see the agenda of Pakistan's Taliban at this point? What does Nawaz Sharif confront there?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, the Taliban targeted three of the more secular liberal political parties in the country in the run-up to the elections and killed over 100 candidates and their supporters. And I think they're not going to hesitate to now target the new government, which is Nawaz Sharif. Many of these Taliban are very, I think, more ideological than the Afghan Taliban. They're more committed to overthrowing the state and the system and trying to create an Islamic state in the country. And we've seen the damage that they have done. Now, I do believe that some Taliban groups can probably be talked to. Remember, the Taliban movement in Pakistan is very divided and very splintered and fragmented as compared to the Afghan Taliban. Some of these groups can be talked to, but others will have to be crushed militarily. There's no other solution for it.
Adil Najam, what has Nawaz Sharif said about the Taliban in the campaign? He's described as being relatively friendly. So has he talked about the threat of overthrow? Has he talked about how his government would handle the challenge to the central government from the Taliban, Adil?
He hasn't, and he has not. Strategically, he hasn't. Many people thought, myself, that he, as well as some others, were strategically quiet on what they would do about this. Partly because this is a hornet's nest that they didn't want to touch right there. Maybe because they didn't have a strong view on this. But once he's prime minister, once they're in the government, he will not have the luxury of staying quiet on it. The Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban, including in this election, have really brought this war to every city and every political rally, it seemed. So he, as prime minister, will not have the luxury of being able to stay silent as he has to now.
What about the unity and stability of the central government? When you have 100-plus candidates and supporters killed, that's a tall number brought to every city, as you say, Adil. Do ordinary Pakistanis worry about an overthrow, an Islamist takeover? Do they welcome it? Do they fear it? Does it look like a real possibility to them?
I don't think Ahmed Rashid is really the expert on this. I don't think the people sort of desire it. I certainly don't think that they want it. I don't think they anticipate it coming any day either. They fear it. They want it to go away. But most of all, they're also confused by it because sort of Pakistan is in this whirlwind that Steve described of just everything hitting them at the same time. What I think is going to happen, and what many Pakistanis maybe even hope will happen, is that Nawaz Sharif is good at infrastructure. That's his forte. Build roads, do large mega projects. Now, if he can do some of that well, especially with energy, which is the big, big, big crisis for everyday Pakistanis every day, if he can start doing that early enough, then I think he can gain a momentum, which is also important for tackling the security issues, because part of the problem with the security issues is that the country is just so torn apart in everything that you can't sort of galvanize them to take the hard steps forward.
Farhan in Florence, South Carolina. Farhan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I've been following the elections very closely, and I think one of my major questions is what I see is that Pakistan is just divided. I mean, even though Nawaz Sharif, he got elected, but he is solely elected in Punjab. He had literally no support in Sindh, and which is the other province, and in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa's Imran Khan, who won the majority. If you look at the dynamics, I still think that Imran Khan still came out as a big winner. I mean, everywhere you go, he has a large support. He came out as the second biggest party, and I don't think that Mr. Sharif would be able to do a lot alone, though he has the number of seats, but I don't think that he can control the country just having Punjab, one province, under his belt. And
Farhan, let us pick it up right there. And, Ahmed Rashid, what about Imran Khan's influence now and the fact that Nawaz Sharif's support was concentrated, not exclusively, but heavily in the Punjab?
Mainly exclusively, and that's a very sad thing. Probably the saddest part of the results, this is something you alluded to right at the beginning, is you today have no national political party. The one political party that could call itself national was the Pakistan People's Party, and that has today been reduced
really, to a sense, party, it has lost all its seat, or nearly all its seat in the Punjab. Mr. Nawaz Sharif has turned his party into a Punjab party. Imran actually hasn't done very well in the Punjab and has been reduced again to one province. So I do think that the argument that Pakistan is a divided country is true. It's more divided after this election than before. However, Pakistan, like many countries in this region, is always playing coalition politics. And once you start forming these governments, you have independent candidates. They come over, join you. You know, power is an amazing source of building coalitions. And I would wager that by the time the Nawaz Sharif government is all set up, he will have more faces from the other provinces than he has right now by cobbling together a coalition. But yes, Pakistan is a divided country, and that is a very disturbing fact.
Stephen Cohen in Washington, you began this hour by talking about Pakistan as being like a man who's just swallowed poison, sitting on dynamite, people shooting at him, hurricane bearing down. Is that just colorful language, or do you see what are the elements there? What's the poison? What's the dynamite? What's the hurricane?
Well, Pakistan is rich in problems. There's no question about it. Pakistan is also rich in people. That is, there are enough good Pakistanis to run a really cool country. So I think that, in a sense, you look at Pakistan, hope is not a policy. As Schultz told me, despair is not a policy. In a sense, we've got to look for policies, both America and I think Pakistanis, somewhere between that. So I think Pakistan could be a major country, an important country. The Indians have to help. We have to help. The Chinese have a role in this. And of course, Pakistanis have to do the kinds of things they've just done that is run a relatively free election. I'm not pessimistic about Pakistan. I'm not optimistic about Pakistan. I'm sort of realistic about Pakistan. But it's so important to the U.S. at least that, in a sense, we have a lot at stake there. And of course, Pakistanis have even more at stake than we do. So I think that it's a country beset with problems, but clearly Pakistanis understand this now. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they were blind to most of these problems. I think Nawaz has laid this out. His campaign was actually a substantive campaign. When I talked to him 15 years ago, he didn't know anything about issues. So I think Pakistanis are moving into the zone where they're more realistic about this. And as Adil Najam said, clearly Pakistanis are really good at coalition politics. In a sense, the Americans could learn something about this. They know how to work together, even though they have different views.
And the stakes for the United States in things working out for Pakistan, Stephen?
I think they're much greater than Iran. Clearly, Pakistan has plenty of nuclear weapons. In the past, it helped other countries go nuclear. For that reason alone, Pakistan is in a category all by itself. And so we have a vital interest in, literally a vital interest in keeping Pakistan stable and normal. And the role, the military, in fact, and I think have played an important role in this. We haven't talked about it. But the military have stayed out of politics. They've allowed this transition to happen. They've approved the normalization, the economic normalization with India. I think they've learned a big lesson about how, you know, their role in Pakistani politics. So I'm hopeful at this point, but realistic that things may go bad, especially the fact that the government has lost a lot of control over a lot of its own territory.
Ahmed Rashid in Lahore, what about U.S. drone attacks on the Taliban in Pakistan? Do you expect a change in that policy under Nawaz Sharif? Do you expect it to be demanded by Sharif?
Sharif is going to have to oppose the American drone. But the reality is that the Americans are not going to stop firing drones and using drones. So this is something that, you know, Pakistan Sharif in particular will have to accept. Now, certainly there will be talks on the use of drones and the sharing of intelligence and perhaps even the one Pakistani demand, which is that, you know, the drones should be used in conjunction with both countries taking the decision together rather than the U.S. doing it separately. Now, but the fact of the matter is that what Sharif is faced with ultimately is that the Americans are not going to stop using drones. There may be a honeymoon period now for a few weeks in which we won't see any drones because the Americans will want to build a relationship with Sharif before resuming drone attacks. But really there will have to be a better program on the dual use of drones by both countries. How that will be worked out exactly is very difficult to say at the moment.
One more call here. Omar in Omaha, Nebraska. Omar, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, quick question and a quick comment, really. Basically, you know, as a Pakistani citizen, and I consider myself as an educated Pakistani citizen, I am disappointed with the results, because I thought, you know, at least over the past 10, 15 years, with media hype and everything, people will educate themselves, they'll use logic, some reasoning. But it looks like, you know, exactly the same has happened. And, you know, they have voted for the same corrupt people who have ruled the country for the past, you know, 50 years, basically. These are the families who have run the country. It's not Nawaz Sharif, it's his family has pretty much run the country for the past 30 years. And people have voted for the same people again. And, you know, I mean, ideally I would like to have people who would allow some freedom of thought, which I don't think Nawaz Sharif really liked that. So that's just my comment.
Omar, let us pick it up right there, and thanks for your call. Adil, how about it? That concern from our caller Omar that this is the same folks who have brought Pakistan to its point today, Adil.
You know, I suspect our friend Omar is a PTI supporter, and I agree with him that, you know, in an ideal world, you would have wanted thinking types and so on and so forth, but I'm not sure it's as depressing as he makes it sound. I don't think he's the same person. This was mentioned again. The Nawaz Sharif of yesterday, the Pakistan of today isn't the Pakistan of yesterday. The U.S. of today is not the U.S. of yesterday. So a lot has changed, and maybe the voter has been smarter than we have given them credit for. The voter has voted, I think, for and against performance. They voted for the one party which in its province had done a relatively better administrative job. And they voted against a party that at the center had clearly not done so. So I think more credit is due to the Pakistani voters who really wants real problems solved. Now, I don't know...
Pakistan getting down to business there. Adil Najam, we're up against the clock here. We're so grateful to you for your time today. Ahmed Rashid, author of Pakistan on the Brink, Stephen Cohen, look for his Shooting for a Century. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.